Let me begin by clarifying a couple things, just so we know where we're standing. First off, the statements in the law to which Jesus refers, we read one of them this morning from Leviticus 19. He's actually drawing on maybe about a half dozen passages. Deal with two different but related subjects, oaths and vows. But Jesus then goes on to talk only about oaths. Vows are solemn promises that are made ultimately to God, though often to other people as well. Yeah, marriage vows would be the example we'd be most familiar with. Oaths are invocations of God or of a sacred object, or at least an object that's very important to the speaker, for the purpose of assuring others that we're telling the truth or that we're going to keep a promise. I swear by my Aunt Priscilla's grave, that's how it happened. Now, since I don't have an Aunt Priscilla, this really shouldn't reassure you. And then sometimes we see these combined, you know, court oaths and oaths of office. You know, you have a vow which is made, spoken with one hand on the Bible, thus invoking the Bible. You're bringing the oath into the vow, combining the two, you know, as the oath is sworn to affirm that the vow will be kept. But like I say, we need to disentangle those. Yeah, because the law talks about both, deals with both together. Jesus is just talking about oaths. He is not, for instance, saying you should not, you know, have marriage vows. That's completely not on the topic at all. And second, and here I have to disagree with a fairly large swath of my brethren and sistren in the church, including actually a fair number of folks around here, Jesus is not declaring a new law in Matthew 5. Yeah, the Mennonite community has historically understood it that way, that Jesus was speaking to forbid any taking of any oath anywhere for any time for any reason, no matter what. Yeah, the Jehovah's Witnesses have interpreted it that way as well. But that's not what Jesus is saying here. This does not apply to whether you can take an oath in court or whatever. The Old Testament law, just as our law does, required oaths in certain circumstances. If Jesus had been intending to set that aside, bearing in mind he said earlier that he's not come to set the law aside but to fulfill it, if he'd intended to, he would have had to do so explicitly, to say, even when the law commands you to take an oath, you may not do so. And he doesn't say that because that's not his concern. Oaths set in the law are matters of legal requirement. You know, they're not something that we are given to choose to do or not to do. They're not a matter of our own initiative. And his focus is on the way that the disciples live and on what in their heart gives rise to the things that they do and the things that they say. If the law commands swearing an oath, that's to serve the law's purposes. If I choose to swear an oath, that is to serve my purpose. It's because I want to convince someone that I'm telling the truth. It's dealing with mistrust, which may be justified or it may not be justified. It may be that I'm swearing an oath because I have gotten into the habit of lying about anything that suits me, and people have begun to pick up on this. And so when I actually am intending to tell the truth and be believed, if I want to be believed, I have to give them an extra kicker. It may be that I'm dealing with somebody who is simply very mistrustful, has been lied to a few too many times. But you know, in either case, that mistrust puts a wall between us. And an oath is like piling up stones and furniture at the base of the wall until you can get the pile high enough that hopefully you can get up on top of the wall and get over it to the point of being believed. You know, if we can't prove we're telling the truth, maybe we can convince the other person that we wouldn't dare lie and they'll believe us for that reason. You know, and that's what oaths are for. And what Jesus effectively says is that's not an acceptable approach. rather than building a pile, what you need to do is speak and live in such a way as to lower that wall. Because oaths have a corrosive effect. You know, if we use them to convince others that we're telling the truth, if we get into that sort of habit, then it becomes very easy for us to start to think, well, I didn't swear on that, so I don't really have to follow through. Yeah, I'm not swearing to this, so I don't really have to tell the truth. You know, I only really have to be honest. When I swear an oath, when I say, and invoke, God to account, and the rest of the time I can be a little bit more flexible. And of course, you start to get into that habit of mind, and it begins to spread. We know how these things go, right? You get used to lying. Well, then you start to kind of fudge the truth, even when you're swearing to it. And before long, people have realized, just because you swear to something doesn't mean you actually meant it. And so then you have to go to bigger and bigger oaths. And so then we get the kind of stuff that the Pharisees were doing that Jesus is referring to in Matthew 23, where they start to say, okay, this oath is binding and this one isn't, and kind of have the hierarchy, which I wonder, if they're legalizing non-binding oaths, what exactly is the point? I mean, you codify in the law the oaths that you don't have to keep. It's another thing that goes to show you exactly how tangled up in their own laws the Pharisees had gotten. And how finally they'd gotten into parsing it for their own benefit. And then, of course, the flip side to all this, people begin to figure that out, and they begin to say, well, if you're just saying this is so, then you're not committed to being honest, and I can't trust you. And so it really feeds lies, it feeds dishonesty and doubt on both sides. Oaths do not make us more honest. They make us less honest, and they make us less trusting. And they distract us from what really matters. Because in bringing us into this mindset that we only have to tell the truth when we swear that we're telling the truth, and in saying, we're calling God to witness on this one thing, it implies that for the rest of it, truth doesn't really matter all that much because God isn't really paying attention. And this is disastrously untrue. As the German pastor and martyr Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote, disciples of Jesus should not swear because there is no such thing as speech not spoken before God. All of their words should be nothing but truth, so that nothing requires verification by oath. Now hear that. There is no such thing as speech not spoken before God. Whenever we speak, God is right with us, listening to every word, and not just hearing the words that come out of our mouth, but hearing the thoughts behind them and knowing the roots in our heart from which they spring. Oaths are unnecessary because they're redundant. God is already witness to everything we say. And he already holds us to account for all of it. It's a funny thing. The Pharisees, the great lawkeepers and lawmakers, their criticism of Jesus is that, he's playing fast and loose with God's law, that he's leading people away from holiness. And yet, part of his criticism of them is that they aren't taking God seriously enough. They aren't taking the law seriously enough. They're taking it all far too lightly. For all their commitment to law-keeping, to holiness and righteousness as best they understood it, there is no awe in their religion. It's a cash register faith. You know, you take the right inputs and you do these things and you put them in and you balance the books, you balance the scales, and it all lines up, and it's all a very transactional view of what religion is on about and what faith is on about and what God is trying to do in us. And they should have known better. The scriptures told them, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But they don't seem to have taken that to heart. Their fear all is really focused on the law, and they seem to deal with it by interpreting the law around so that they're comfortable with it, and of course that they can then come down like a ton of bricks on anybody that they don't like. They show no real conception in the New Testament or in the extra testamental sources that we have, that they served a God who would dare upset all their expectations and their careful schemes. Much less any sense that they should expect him to. In a very fundamental way, they had created for themselves a safe religion with a tame God. The law that they had built to cage people in, they used just as much, not that they maybe thought of it this way, but they used just as much to cage God in and to make him predictable. And Jesus comes into that and blows it to shrapnel. And in some ways, nowhere more than at this point, because he says, in essence, just speak the truth as purely as you can. Anything you clutter it up with only makes it easier for you to lie and only creates a ground for distrust. And the Pharisees resisted that, and we resist it because we sense that the truth is dangerous. And we're right. The truth is dangerous. Honesty is dangerous. God is dangerous. You know, as Annie Dillard writes in Teaching a Stone to Talk, one of my all-time favorite quotes, on the whole, I do not find Christians outside the catacombs sufficiently sensible of the conditions. Does anyone have the foggiest idea what sort of power we so blithely invoke? Or, as I suspect, does no one believe a word of it? The churches are children playing on the floor with their chemistry sets, mixing up a batch of TNT to kill a Sunday morning. It is madness to wear ladies' straw hats and velvet hats to church. We should all be wearing crash helmets. Ushers should issue life preservers and signal flares. They should lash us to our pews, for the sleeping God may wake someday and take offense. Or the waking God may draw us out to where we can never return. God is dangerous because God is alive and is the source of all life. Only death is safe because the worst has already happened. He is dangerous because he is truth, and we cannot control the truth. We cannot make it serve our purposes unless we adulterate it with lies. He is dangerous because he calls us into a relationship with him. And relationships are dangerous because they put you at the mercy of someone you cannot control and can never completely know. As indeed, you can never completely know yourself, but when you're dealing with somebody else, it's just doubled. And if our human relationships are dangerous enough as it is, with other finite people who are limited in their ability to what they can do, how much more dangerous a relationship with the infinite God of the universe, whose mind we cannot fathom, whose purposes we cannot understand? We cannot know what he will do. We can only trust that he is good. As the characters in the Chronicles of Narnia are famous for saying, he's not a tame lion. If we want his life, we have to accept the danger of the truth, spoken without holding back and with no effort at self-protection, with no crossed fingers and no loopholes. If we want to be his people, we have to accept the danger of a relationship with the one who searches all our hearts and knows us to the depth of our being. As Bonhoeffer put it, there is no following Jesus without living in the truth unveiled before God and other people. Unveiled, all our disguises, all our defenses, all of our shams, all of our illusions, all the things we want people to believe about ourselves, all of our efforts to manipulate our communication, to manipulate our reputation, to manipulate others' perceptions of us, to hide the things of which we are ashamed, to puff up the things about ourselves that aren't quite good enough, to impress others, all of that striving, and all of those structures and protections we build around ourselves, God brings down. Because God is truth and God is true. And so if we are his people, we are called to be true in our relationship with him and our relationships with others. He commands us to speak the truth and nothing but the truth to him, to each other, and really perhaps hardest of all, to ourselves, and to live according to the truth we speak. No alibis, no half measures, no crossed fingers, no loopholes. No backup plan. No kidding. And to trust that he is good and that he does love us and he is faithful. And to rest on nothing but that trust and nothing but his faithfulness. And if we will do it, we will find that he is faithful. And it is good. Let's pray.